it's a hassle. I just fit in. You know it's a struggle just getting in. Sometimes I feel like quitting the game. Well, I be reeling fast, start living again. Give myself a real good talking to. All the buzz in my head, I don't know, baby, if it's me or you. Take a little Chardonnay on the ceiling. Crazy the way I'm feeling. In and out, off and on. Make me wonder what in the world went wrong. Weak and strong.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
On the heels of a record-setting sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart, the lawyers in that case have filed a second discrimination suit, this time against Costco Wholesale Corporation. The suit, filed on Tuesday, alleges that the company kept women out of top store management posts. According to the complainant, women make up half of the company's workforce, but fewer than 1 in 6 of Costco's top store managers are women. Costco's annual staff turnover is under 23% among hourly workers, while Walmart's is 50%. The company has been criticized by stockholders because it offers better pay and benefits than Walmart, creating higher costs.
Many people are excited about the Olympic Games being held in Athens this week, but city officials are putting the homeless and workers in last place. According to a report by Amnesty International, up to 40 construction workers died due to poor safety standards during the construction of Olympic facilities. Amnesty International also reports that Athens officials are attempting to clean up the city by rounding up homeless, drug-addicted, and mentally ill people and locking them in psychiatric hospitals until international tourists leave. Also, the government has suspended authorizing inmate parole at 6 of the country's prisons.
The majority of customer service representatives at America West have voted to join the Teamsters. The Phoenix-based airline said it was disappointed by the outcome, but said it will respect the decision of its employees. Until the vote on Tuesday, the customer service workers were the only segment of the airline not represented by a union.
Like all workers, baseball players try to avoid a strike, but in an effort to maintain a two-league system and prevent mergers, Japanese pro baseball players voted overwhelmingly to obtain strike rights. 98% of union members in Japan's Professional Baseball Players Association voted in favor. Preparations are currently underway to strike if several Pacific League teams continue with plans to merge. The Japan Trade Union Confederation pledged to support any strike action by the baseball players.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to take half of the year off from work? Move to Norway. A Norwegian paper recently reported that the amount of time workers are absent from work per year was more than 170 days. The average amount of sick days used by Norwegians amounts to more than 4 weeks. Throw in the average 5 weeks of vacation time, 11 national paid holidays and weekends, and it turns out Norwegians are absent nearly half of the calendar year. The chronic absenteeism has become such a problem that the government now requires a doctor's note for anyone who misses 8 weeks in a year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, George Bush flip-flops again. The Associated Press today reported that Bush, who has adamantly opposed drug reimportation, is now flip-flopping, changing his tune. President Bush said Wednesday, Writes the Associated Press today, that pressure is building in Congress to allow lower-priced drugs to be imported from Canada and elsewhere, but it's still unclear whether it would be safe. Yeah, you got to worry about all those dead Canadians living here in the People's Republic of Vermont. I can tell you, we're just 2 hours from Montreal, and there's just dead Canadians falling over the border all the time from taking those dangerous Canadian drugs that happen to be manufactured in the United States. I'm looking at this, Bush told supporters. There's a lot of pressure in Congress for importation. Why the sudden flip-flop on Bush's part? Well, a new report last week showed that 79% of people on Medicare are in favor of allowing Americans to buy prescription drugs from Canada. About 8 in 10 people on Medicare, 79%, according to Kaiser Family Foundation, say they favor changing the law to allow Americans to buy prescription drugs from Canada. Now, let's take this a step farther. I mean, what's going on in Canada is that the Canadian government is doing the same thing that the Pentagon does for the armed forces of the United States. They go to the drug companies and they say, you know, I know there's that little pharmacy down there in Banff that buys 300 tablets of penicillin a year from you down there in Connecticut, you big drug company, Pfizer or whoever it is, and they're paying, you know, 6 cents a tablet, but we're going to buy 300 million tablets of that stuff because we're supplying the whole nation, or in the case of the Pentagon, the whole army,
And so we would like a discount. We would like a better price. And if you can't supply us with a better price, we'll buy them from a pharmaceutical manufacturer in Germany or in France or in the United Kingdom. Or maybe we'll even set up our own factory. Maybe a company will want to make them right here in Canada. That's what they've been saying to the American drug manufacturers. And the American, and see, it's called competition. And the American drug manufacturers have been forced to reduce their prices by competition, or the threat of competition. So the cost of drugs in Canada isn't lower than in the United States. The cost of drugs in the United States is dramatically inflated. I mean, let's look at what's really going on here. What's really going on here is national price gouging, supported and promoted by the Bush administration and by previous administrations, let me add, Democratic and Republican. But it has reached a crescendo. In the last 3 years, we've seen as much as a 50% increase in health care costs in the United States, and much of that led by pharmaceuticals. That is not the rate of inflation, my friends. And no matter how many millions of your pharmaceutical dollars they spend running ads on TV trying to convince you that they're actually spending the money on research, the vast majority of research for pharmaceuticals done in the United States is done with government funding in universities and research centers. And then the drug companies license those and, you know, off to the races. This is why Bush is flip-flopping on this thing. It boggles my mind that nobody, you know, none of the commentators, nobody is talking about this. You know, everybody said, well, we ought to be able to buy drugs from Canada. I mean, here in the state of Vermont, our governor, our Republican government, who was elected with less than a majority because the Democrats and the progressives split the ticket, you know, showing the wisdom of Ralph Nader's entry. But that's a whole other rant. Anyhow, our Republican governor here in Vermont, Jim Douglas, recently, in response to his challenger running TV ads saying, you know, Governor Douglas is waiting for George Bush to say that he can before he decided he's going to sue the federal government. I mean, this only, what, 5 years after Bernie Sanders organized the first busload of senior citizens to go up to Canada and buy pharmaceuticals? So here we have too little, too late. 3.5 years into the Bush term, the ban on prescription drug imports has already cost Americans $210 billion. A direct transfer of wealth, speaking of those who like to transfer wealth and reallocate wealth and riches, a direct transfer of wealth out of our pockets and into the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies, who then continue to transfer that wealth into the pockets of the Republican Party. Anyhow, welcome to our program today. It's Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, 12 minutes past the hour. If you'd like to call in, be on the program, our number is 1-866-889-8894. Drop into our chat room, go to tomhartman.com, and click on live chat. It'll take you to the chat room. Which is hosted by the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, but you've got to do it that way. You got to go off because they've just changed software and it's funky and Mercury's retrograde and nothing mechanical works right now, right? If the astrologers would tell us. So our news report for the day from Andy Borowitz, borowitzreport.com. Bush outsources election to India. Maybe you have heard about this. George Bush's approval rating in Bangalore now tops 98%. Citing significant cost savings, President George W. Bush today outsourced the fall election to a call center in Bangalore, India. Mr. Bush said that by having all voting and vote counting taking place in Bangalore, the United States will save up to $3 billion, which could be used to finance democracy in Iraq. After votes are tallied, the president said, customer service representatives at the Bangalore call center will notify the American people of the results and also offer them technical assistance for their notebook computers and wireless devices. Additionally, the winner of the fall election will make his acceptance speech simply by pressing 1 on his phone, while the loser will concede by pressing 2. But moments after Bush had outsourced the election, Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry blasted the decision, arguing it would be impossible for a fair election to be held in Bangalore, since Mr. Bush's approval rating in that city stands at 98%. Mr. Bush's popularity in Bangalore has soared steadily since taking office as a result of the 9.8 million jobs he has created there. At one of Bangalore's largest call centers, where customer service representatives were undergoing a six-week training program to sound American, worker Rajendra Jamal offered a typical view. George W. Bush rules, much like the popular singer Christina Aguilera, who also rules. Mr. Jamal's opinion of Senator Kerry, however, was less charitable. And John Kerry does not rule at all. To the contrary, he sucks, dude. Elsewhere, Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge revealed today he was a metrosexual American, adding, orange is the new yellow. Thank you. Andy Borowitz, theborowitzreport.com. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Storm in Southern Illinois, is on the line. Hey, Storm, what's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Hey, Tom, under the provisions of NAFTA, the Bush administration and the pharmaceutical companies cannot stop any products coming in from Canada or Mexico. That's the law. They can't do it. Now, they can say, well, we have to inspect, the FDA has to inspect these products. Well, that's not true, because the FDA only inspects about 2% of the food coming in from these other countries. And they don't really care at the FDA whether the food's contaminated or not, because look at all the people who've been sickened by food from Mexico.
Yeah, that would be the USDA, by the way, not the FDA. The U.S. Department
of
Agriculture.
That's right. Right.
Yeah, but yes and no. I mean, I may be wrong. I'm not a scholar on NAFTA, but I don't believe that NAFTA addresses the rights of individual citizens to buy across borders. I think it has to do with corporate activity. One company selling to another company, the kinds of things that would be covered by tariffs. Traditionally, if you buy something from outside the United States, I mean, you may have to pay a local sales tax or something, but you don't have to declare it at the border and pay a tariff on it. And those are the kind of things that I believe NAFTA covers. So, you know, if you wanted to buy your drugs from a Canadian pharmacy, I don't think NAFTA would come into play. But here's how it's happening. Here's how they're getting around it. The pharmaceutical companies now are refusing to sell to the pharmacies. What's happened is there's been such a shakeout on this. You know, it's so many people getting the word, and they're going to the internet, and there are now maybe a dozen, two dozen pharmacies in Canada that have become essentially the big, you know, the Amazon.coms of internet pharmacy in Canada. And everybody's going to them. And because there has been so much activity and it's so easy to define, I mean, the pharmaceutical companies are seeing suddenly, you know, their sales of various drugs are just going through the roof to a half a dozen vendors in Canada. They're saying to those companies, we're not going to sell to you anymore. Sorry. And, you know, so they're just going to starve it at the source. It's remarkable. It's sort of like the plan rather than making abortion illegal in many states, they simply, you know, cut back to the point where, you know, under various kinds of pressure, where nobody is studying how to do it in medical school, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's an imperfect metaphor. But in any case, that's how they're going about it. That's what they're going after.
Right. One more quick thing, Tom,
sure.
If I might. The most effective bumper sticker that I've seen, and I wish I'd see more of them, would be the bumper sticker or yard sign that says "Outsource Bush."
Yeah, there you go. I'm all in favor of that. Yeah, I agree. Storm, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you there in Southern Illinois. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
You know, I just saw full page ads in both Time Magazine and I think also in Newsweek by Glaxo.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do, it's that FUD thing, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And they're saying these drugs don't really come from Canada. It's like you buy stuff online, and it says it's from Canada, but it's like the web server is in Barbados, and the bank is in Curacao. And, I mean, it was just amazing the lie that these people told.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're basically, full-page ads, millions of dollars to convince people that if you're buying your blood pressure medicine from Canada, you're not even really getting it from Canada. You're getting counterfeits.
Well, the reality is that in many third-world countries in particular, even if you go into a pharmacy, but in particular if you're buying from somebody that you don't know, perhaps over the Internet or on the street, pharmaceutical drugs, you may well be getting phony drugs. I mean, it's a big problem. They've looked at a lot of the drugs being imported from Mexico, for example, and they're finding fakes. You know, 60 Minutes did a show on this a while ago. So, I mean, there is a legitimate concern there. But and that's why I say, why don't we just allow Medicare to negotiate prices? I mean, it's very simple.
You know why? Because it'll cut $35 billion a year off the profit margin.
There you go. And those people are spending millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars a year to buy politicians in Washington, D.C. And that's the system that is broken. I mean, the system that is broken here is, I mean, our health care system is broken. But the reason our health care system is broken is because our political system is broken. And our political system is broken because of the corrupting influence of money on the one hand and combined with the misplaced power that corporations have, this extraordinary power that's been given to them, the power to claim themselves as persons and claim the Bill of Rights. Anyhow, I got to move along. Chris, thanks for the call.
Good to hear from you.
It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. In my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, I examine how Thomas Jefferson's democratic vision for our nation has been under constant attack by conservatives who see political power as a tool to manipulate laws for their personal financial gain. Among the truths you'll learn by reading this book are how Jefferson warned that the merging of big business with state interests could be the greatest threat to democracy. Today we find that these fascist ideals have been prevalent in virtually all of George Bush's political and judicial appointments and legislation, the same as Hitler did when he overthrew the German democracy in 1933. You'll also learn how new scientific studies show that Jefferson was right when he cited in the Declaration of Independence that democracy was consistent with the laws of nature. Turns out that the natural state of all animals is democracy, and alpha animals only rarely act as leaders. What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy by me, Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Hey, California, where is your tax money going? To Walmart, of course. A new study released by UC Berkeley reveals that the low wages paid at Walmart stores forces employees to accept about $86 million annually in public assistance programs. That includes $32 million annually in health-related service and $54 million per year in services such as food stamps and subsidized housing. Walmart employees in that state earn on average 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. It's unlike any other game around.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Curry deals away his ace in the hole, writes Helen Thomas. Helen Thomas, the grande dame of American reporters. She has covered for the Associated Press, and now I believe she's with UPI. She has covered presidents since Harry Truman. And she always sat in the front row in the White House press room, particularly since the administration of John Kennedy. She was always seated in the front row, and she was always asked the first question. As she got older and older, she was, you know, the respected elder. It's funny how there's, I believe, a biological imperative, an absolute instinct for this. We have several cats here in the house that we live in, and one of them is an 18-year-old female who's only weighs 4 or 5 pounds, and a couple of them are great big, you know, 15-pound, 20-pound males, and you know, young, couple, you know, 2 years old, and they all defer to this little old lady. She absolutely rules. And you know, this is something that I think is just built into us. Respect your elders. There is something called wisdom. It is the juxtaposition of age, that is to say, experience and knowledge. You can't have wisdom with just knowledge. I thought I was wise when I was 20. I was. I might have been smart, but I wasn't wise. And which is not to say that I'm wise now. You know, give me another 20 years, and maybe I'll get there. But we'll see. Anyway, Helen Thomas was considered the wise elder of the press corps until she had the impertinence, the audacity, to ask George Bush a tough question in one of his first news conferences, and then ask a follow-up because he tried to wiggle out of answering her question, and that was it. Boom! The Bush White House punishes its enemies, even if they happen to be citizens of the United States. So Helen Thomas has been sitting in the back of the room and hasn't been called on since. And she's been, you may say, a little critical of the Bush administration. And interestingly, her criticism has been limited to specific issues. I mean, she hasn't been sounding like, you know, like one of these Swift Vote veterans guys who were, you know, PO'd at John Kerry because he came back and opposed the war. Just today, the Washington Post reporting that this main guy who's been on all the talk shows recently going, we weren't under fire when Kerry fished that guy out of the water. Turns out he was awarded the Bronze Star that day for that incident. He was commanding another Swift boat in the river for being under fire. And in the documentation in which it, you know, claimed, you know, for claiming his medal, he it all said, you know, he was under fire. Well, anyway, a slight digression. Anyhow, here, Helen Thomas comes along and says, now, this in her article that was published in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer on the 18th, on Wednesday. She said, it appears American voters have little choice between the presidential candidates in the November election when it comes to the disastrous war against Iraq. And then she's talking about John Kerry putting his foot in his mouth when George W. said, what should you do? You know, would you have voted again knowing what you know now? And Kerry, you know, like a senator, you know, let's take care of let's understand all the minute detail. You know, like he voted against the $87 billion because it was being paid for with debt. He was trying to make a statement about balancing budgets. Well, you know, you can't do nuance in a presidential campaign when the guy you're going up against doesn't speak in complete sentences. And it's just, you know, it's, Farid Zakaris in Newsweek this week. He has a really good piece called Why Kerry is Right on Iraq. And, you know, he gets into this. He says, you know, the more intelligent question is, given what we knew at the time, was toppling Saddam's regime a worthwhile objective? Bush's answer is yes. Howard Dean's is no. Kerry is that, yeah, it was worthwhile, but disastrously executed. And he says, well, I think that Kerry was right. Who knows? I have this horrible, horrible feeling that Kerry really put his foot in this one. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
On the heels of a record-setting sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart, the lawyers in that case have filed a second discrimination suit, this time against Costco Wholesale Corporation. The suit, filed on Tuesday, alleges that the company kept women out of top store management posts. According to the complainant, women make up half of the company's workforce, but fewer than 1 in 6 of Costco's top store managers are women. Costco's annual staff turnover is under 23% among hourly workers, while Walmart's is 50%. The company has been criticized by stockholders because it offers better pay and benefits than Walmart, creating higher costs.
Many people are excited about the Olympic Games being held in Athens this week, but city officials are putting the homeless and workers in last place. According to a report by Amnesty International, up to 40 construction workers died due to poor safety standards during the construction of Olympic facilities. Amnesty International also reports that Athens officials are attempting to clean up the city by rounding up homeless, drug-addicted, and mentally ill people and locking them in psychiatric hospitals until international tourists leave. Also, the government has suspended authorizing inmate parole at 6 of the country's prisons.
The majority of customer service representatives at America West have voted to join the Teamsters. The Phoenix-based airline said it was disappointed by the outcome, but said it will respect the decision of its employees. Until the vote on Tuesday, the customer service workers were the only segment of the airline not represented by a union.
Like all workers, baseball players try to avoid a strike, but in an effort to maintain a two-league system and prevent mergers, Japanese pro baseball players voted overwhelmingly to obtain strike rights. 98% of union members in Japan's Professional Baseball Players Association voted in favor. Preparations are currently underway to strike if several Pacific League teams continue with plans to merge. The Japan Trade Union Confederation pledged to support any strike action by the baseball players.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to take half of the year off from work? Move to Norway. A Norwegian paper recently reported that the amount of time workers are absent from work per year was more than 170 days. The average amount of sick days used by Norwegians amounts to more than 4 weeks. Throw in the average 5 weeks of vacation time, 11 national paid holidays and weekends, and it turns out Norwegians are absent nearly half of the calendar year. The chronic absenteeism has become such a problem that the government now requires a doctor's note for anyone who misses 8 weeks in a year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The new Caesars. Is the Bush administration building an empire? Is empire inherently incompatible with democracy in the United States? These, I think, are some of the most important questions of our day. Senator Gary Hart has written about this most recently in a new article in Salon.com. You can find it's called The Two Caesars. He's also the author of a book, The Fourth Power, A New Grand Strategy for the United States in the 21st Century. Former United States Senator from Colorado, co-chairman of the U.S. Commission on National Security in the 21st Century, and senior counsel at Cowdert Brothers. Senator Gary Hart, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Great pleasure. The firm is called Coudert.
Coudert, thank you very much. I appreciate that. French.
French-American.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could do German with you, but I can't, French is my is a hole in my language competence. You write in this that about the president's argument, his rationalization, that deposing Saddam Hussein was necessary for peace in the Middle East, which is his rationalization du jour. You know, it's no longer, oh, gee, there's weapons there. It's we have to do this to bring peace to the Middle East. That number one, it's a severely flawed argument. Number two, that essentially what he's doing is reframing the entire purpose of the United States 228 years after our founding. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, this requires some explanation. We salute the flag of the United States of America and the Republic for which it stands, and I've spent the last 10 or 15 years reading and thinking and writing about America as a republic and what being a republic means. We, in the 20th century, 21st, we use the language of democracy. Our founders used the language of the republic, which dates, of course, to the Greek city-state 2,800 years ago. The qualities of a republic are diametrically opposed to the qualities of an empire, and that's why when Rome became an empire, it quit being a republic in the first century B.C., and there has never been an instance in human history, to my knowledge anyway, where a nation has been simultaneously a republic and an empire. And the arguments now being used for the American military presence in Iraq are very imperial ones, that is to say, by our political and military presence in directly in the middle of the Middle East, that we can condition the behavior of neighboring nations, pretty much provide the firepower for keeping a friendly government in place in Iraq and conditioning the behavior of neighboring nations, guarantee the supplies of oil for ourselves and others, and provide protection for our ally Israel. These are either explicit or implicit in what the strategy really was.
Right. But Senator Hart, if you go back and you look at the history of the Roman Empire, when Rome built their, 41 wooden ships, or I forget the number, and began the transition from republic to empire, and there was a very specific point in time, it was right after the silver crisis, the currency crisis that they had, which was precipitated by the fact that they had so deforested Italy that it cost more for the wood to smelt silver than the silver was worth. And essentially, they had to go off in search of wood. In other words, they ran out of fuel, and so they started attacking other countries. And that was, many scholars suggest, that was one of the major transition points. Aren't we in a very similar situation right now where we're importing half of our oil, we're running out of fuel, we passed the Hubbert Peak in the 1970s, and thus, unless we're going to change our energy policy, we are, in fact, putting ourselves in the position of having to be empire.
Well, I think it's a very interesting analogy, one I'd have to do a little more reading about. In any case, yes, I was many years ago a national candidate and argued at that time in the early 80s that if we continue to rely for foreign supplies of oil, we would be going to war for oil. In many cases, we'd get war, but we wouldn't get oil. Since then, we've had two wars in the Middle East, and I think so long as our energy consumption patterns and foreign dependencies continue, we will have more wars in the Persian Gulf area and other places. So, yes, I think we are, and in the age of terrorism, we're also financing our own destruction because the money we spend for that oil makes its way into organizations that help finance terrorist groups.
Yeah. FYI, I wrote a book called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which has the whole Rome thing in it, if you're curious.
Well, I will find it.
Yeah. In any case, where do you see this going? How do you see this playing out? This
Pax Center? We're now in a hiatus in Iraq. Had Iraq worked out the way the Bush planners, the administration's planners had hoped and I guess believed, a kind of military walkover followed by enormous public acceptance of U.S. occupation and governance. I think there would have been, as there were hints from both Rumsfeld and Cheney, we would have moved on Iran and Syria next, if not directly militarily, at least to mass troops on the borders and begin to intimidate those nations into compliance or behavior according to our wishes. But we are not there now, and I think we're at a crossroads. Do we stay indefinitely at great cost of lives and money, or do we have some sort of a plan for exit and withdrawal? And one cannot get that answer out of this administration.
Well, and in fact, there's what may be, you know, a lunatic fringe conspiracy element or might have some substance, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, a group of folks who are suggesting that we are setting up the conflict with Iran right now. The Chalabi is in Iran. Sistani, who was Iranian but is inclined to be moderate toward Iran, is gone. He's in London. Sadr apparently is willing to embrace Iran, and then we would use that as an excuse to say Iran is interfering in the internal affairs of Iraq, and therefore we've got, you know, is, do you have a sense that we are setting up a fight in Iran?
I would have, again, if things had worked out differently and better for us in Iraq, but I think the president's credibility and the support for further military actions or expanding military actions is very, very thin. Now, if he were to be reelected, he might read that as a mandate to begin to stir up trouble with Iran as a means of continuing the grand scheme for the Middle East. But I've struggled mightily in the last 25 or 30 years to avoid cynicism, but I am increasingly a skeptic about what our government tells us.
Yeah, increasingly many of us are. By the way, if you'd like to ask Senator Gary Hart a question, our number 1-866-889-8894. You were a member of a commission with Senator Rudman, who before 9/11 saw this coming. You know, just essentially saw this stuff coming. And
yes.
I'm just absolutely baffled by the fact that you guys came out and said, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have these kind of terrorist attacks. It's going to happen in the United States. And then on August 6th, George Bush gets a memo that says Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States. And then on 9/11, he's sitting in a classroom. His Andy card comes over. He already knows that the first plane is hit. Card comes over. The second plane is hit. The United States is under attack. And he sits there for 7 minutes and you know, with an upside-down book in his hand, chewing on the inside of his cheek. We've heard about the intelligence systems breaking down, and David Kay talking about that today, but how did, at the very highest levels of government, how did the president, the vice president, and the cabinet so completely and utterly miss this and fail to respond appropriately to it?
Well, it is a long story, and I'll try to be brief. We were mandated to report to the next president of the United States, whomever that might be, and this was not just another federal commission. This is the first time any group of Americans had taken a serious overview of U.S. national security needs since 1947, and we took 2.5 years to do it, and it was 7 Democrats and 7 Republicans with no political axe to grind or agenda. We sought to meet with the new president in January 2001 and were rejected. We sought to meet with the vice president and were rejected, but we did meet with Rumsfeld, Powell, and Rice and delivered our report, the first of 50 recommendations of which was create a consolidated national homeland security capability to prepare to prevent and respond to terrorist attacks when they occurred. We were listened to politely and respectfully, but it turned out with historic insight by a group of people who did not see terrorism as the principal threat, but who had on their agenda already, according to Richard Clark and others, deposing Saddam Hussein. So my only explanation, I can't answer questions about why somebody else didn't do what they should have done. They have to answer that themselves. But the best explanation I can give is they had their minds made up as to what the threats were before they ever entered office, and we just represented some kind of a nuisance. The second thing is that the American media missed the story. And the only way you get accountability from public officials is if the American people demand it, and the only way they can demand it is if they know what's going on. And if they don't read that 14 Americans, after 2.5 years of study, say terrorists are coming and we better get ready, then they're not going to pick up the phone and call their member of Congress and say, what are you doing to prevent this?
Right.
And so there was just a total lack of, a total breakdown in the democratic process.
A lack of political will, a lack of, and right across the board. Fareed Zakaria in Newsweek this week has a piece called Why Kerry is Right on Iraq. And he makes a point that I haven't heard a lot of folks make, and I would like to get your take on it. He suggests that we were in the last few years, basically, we were in a position where we had Saddam in a box, and yet we were shooting ourselves in the foot, lousy metaphor, but whatever. We were harming ourselves by keeping him there because Osama bin Laden's main recruiting tool in the Middle East was the fact that, A, the United States had our troops, infidels on Saudi soil, which, we had there in part to keep Saddam in the box, and B, we were starving to death, literally, the people of Iraq, and many people suggest as many as 500,000 people a year were dying in Iraq as a consequence of the United States sanctions. And therefore, we had to do something. We either had to move away from sanctions and, re-embrace Saddam as we had before 91, or we had to take him out. Do you think that those are is that a false choice? Are those the only two? Okay, what are your thoughts on that?
The president essentially hypothesized that we had only two choices, either deposing him or doing nothing. Well, that was not the case. The argument that I made at the time in 2002 was that there should be permanent, intrusive, coercive international inspection. That would, in effect, put inspectors in the country round the clock, whether he liked it or not, and that the international community would support that. And I think they would have if that option had been presented to them. Second is enforcement of the oil for food program. Why the people were being starved weren't our sanctions. It was the failure of Saddam to distribute the money he was making from oil to the people.
Right.
He was starving the people. We weren't. And if we had been tougher with the UN and been more intrusive ourselves in that process, we could have forced him to distribute that money. And again, the issue was containment. Now you can say, but he was an evil dictator. The last count was that there are 38 to 40 evil dictators in the world, including one in North Korea who has starved more people than Saddam Hussein, and no one, including George Bush, is arguing for preemptive war against North Korea.
Yeah, or against China, for that matter. And, they've killed 1 million Tibetans, and on it goes. But do you mind taking a few calls, Senator Hart?
Not at all.
We're talking with Senator Gary Hart, who has a new column out called The New Caesars in Salon.com today, and is also the author of an extraordinary book, The Fourth Power, A New Grand Strategy for the United States in the 21st Century. Let's go first to Michigan. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan, is on the line. Raymond, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Listen, I just have three thoughts, but the two of them up front is with respect to our current situation and this withdrawal of troops from some of these foreign areas. Do you think maybe the strategy here is to get enough troops a home side to reconstitute a couple divisions for expeditionary forces to go over to do Iran or some other things like that?
In other words, are we going to bounce these forces out of Europe and into Iran?
Part of that is coupled with, I think that their preference was to go for Syria next. Do you think they'll let Israel loose to take care of that as they add more divisions to take care of Iran?
Good questions. And Senator Hart, we've only got about 2.5 minutes, and we also have a caller from Denver, Colorado, on the other line, as a matter of fact.
I'll be brief.
Okay.
I don't think the American public today would support an expanded war to Iran. unless there is a great deal more accurate and confirmable evidence that it represents a threat to us. So I don't think that first thing is about to happen. The timing of the withdrawal of troops is a curious one, and coming as it does at this point. Second, the Israelis have never waited for us to unleash them. When they see a threat to their security, they act on it, as they have many times in the past. So I don't think we leash or unleash the Israelis. They're very capable of looking after themselves.
Yeah, okay. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jeff in Denver, Colorado, on the line. Jeff, you're live with Senator Gary Hart.
Hi. First, I miss you being our senator. Really miss you a lot. Secondly, besides...
I'm sorry, I missed...
You've got to speak up, Jeff.
Okay. Well, first, thanks for being our senator. We really miss you.
Thank
Secondly,
you.
What is, besides voting and so forth, what do you think are the most important things a citizen can do in order to make change?
Good question. I'm sorry, we only have about 10 seconds here, Senator Hart.
Well, I guess I'd say get involved in the sense of work for candidates, organize community discussion groups, demand a better press corps, a better press coverage of serious issues in this country.
Well said.
More responsibility by the press.
Senator Gary Hart, thank you very much for being with us.
Great pleasure.
10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
The recent handover of power back to the Iraqis has got investors worried. They ask, what about our war profiteering? Will we still be able to privatize everything in sight? Darlings, everything is under control because everything is still under our control. Alawi has been a wonderful CIA asset for years. Ambassador John Negroponte cut his teeth working with death squads out of Honduras in the 80s, and 140,000 American troops are protecting our oil as we pump it out from under their soil. We won't let this business bonanza be ruined by the evils of accountability or democracy. So relax. We know what we're doing. I'm Zena Fogg for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
about 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. George Bush yesterday made a few very specific claims. He was speaking about our men and women in uniform. He said the housing conditions are better for those who wear our uniform, is a claim of the day. The fact, this, quoting the Army Times, President Bush proposed reducing the budget for military family housing by $1.5 billion when lawmakers tried to restore this cut by reducing the tax cut for millionaires by $5,000 a year. The White House and its allies in Congress blocked the proposal. Bush claimed yesterday, I want to help our men and women activated for duty in the National Guard and Reserves. These brave Americans put their jobs on hold and leave their families behind when we called. Fact. This from Gannett News. The Bush administration is formally opposing a proposal to give National Guard and Reserve members access to the Pentagon's health insurance program. A recent, that's right. They can get activated. They can go over to Iraq. They can get shot at. They don't have access to the Pentagon's health insurance program. A recent General Accountability Office report estimated that one of every five Guard members has no health insurance. None. President Bush, his claim yesterday, will continue to stand side by side with those who wear the uniform and the family members of those who wear the uniform. Fact. This from Inside Defense magazine on July 12th in congressional hearing on the 11th of May of this year. After President Bush cut funding for what the military said it needed for training, the Guard and Reserves now say they are, quote, facing a potential shortfall of more than $280 million in its next budget next fiscal year that, if left unchecked, would halt all training drills for soldiers next spring, end quote. At a congressional hearing this year, four soldiers testified on the dangerous, quote, lack of training reservists receive in urban environments before being sent, end quote, before being sent to fight in cities in Iraq. And finally, George Bush's final claim about our military, he said, we'll help our children of military families meet the challenges of a life on the move. We're going to put grant money to help so military children get a real education. The fact here from the Army Times. In February of last year, under the headline, An Act of Betrayal, the Army Times reported that the Bush administration late last year notified the military that they intend to close 19 commissaries and may close 19 more. The initiative is the latest in a string of actions by the Bush administration to cut or hold down growth in pay and benefits, including basic pay, combat pay, health care benefits, and the death gratuity paid to survivors of troops who die on active duty.
Well, never having gone off to war himself, he just doesn't get it. You know, he just doesn't get it. It's a Tom Hartman program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
On the heels of a record-setting sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart, the lawyers in that case have filed a second discrimination suit, this time against Costco Wholesale Corporation. The suit, filed on Tuesday, alleges that the company kept women out of top store management posts. According to the complainant, women make up half of the company's workforce, but fewer than 1 in 6 of Costco's top store managers are women. Costco's annual staff turnover is under 23% among hourly workers, while Walmart's is 50%. The company has been criticized by stockholders because it offers better pay and benefits than Walmart, creating higher costs.
Many people are excited about the Olympic Games being held in Athens this week, but city officials are putting the homeless and workers in last place. According to a report by Amnesty International, up to 40 construction workers died due to poor safety standards during the construction of Olympic facilities. Amnesty International also reports that Athens officials are attempting to clean up the city by rounding up homeless, drug-addicted, and mentally ill people and locking them in psychiatric hospitals until international tourists leave. Also, the government has suspended authorizing inmate parole at 6 of the country's prisons.
The majority of customer service representatives at America West have voted to join the Teamsters. The Phoenix-based airline said it was disappointed by the outcome, but said it will respect the decision of its employees. Until the vote on Tuesday, the customer service workers were the only segment of the airline not represented by a union.
Like all workers, baseball players try to avoid a strike, but in an effort to maintain a two-league system and prevent mergers, Japanese pro baseball players voted overwhelmingly to obtain strike rights. 98% of union members in Japan's Professional Baseball Players Association voted in favor. Preparations are currently underway to strike if several Pacific League teams continue with plans to merge. The Japan Trade Union Confederation pledged to support any strike action by the baseball players.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to take half of the year off from work? Move to Norway. A Norwegian paper recently reported that the amount of time workers are absent from work per year was more than 170 days. The average amount of sick days used by Norwegians amounts to more than 4 weeks. Throw in the average 5 weeks of vacation time, 11 national paid holidays and weekends, and it turns out Norwegians are absent nearly half of the calendar year. The chronic absenteeism has become such a problem that the government now requires a doctor's note for anyone who misses 8 weeks in a year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder,
Is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to people in the news who've got their tongues moving 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today, I've got a network of goobers for you. The honchos of NBC, CBS, and ABC. These conglomerate media barons have decreed that this year's national political conventions are worthy of only 1 hour of primetime coverage and only 3 nights of each convention. These conventions will produce the next president, who will decide everything from war to taxation. Yet the corporate arbiters of our public airwaves deem it more important to rebroadcast reruns of sitcoms than to cover our nation's quadrennial rituals of democracy. The honchos say that the conventions are scripted events that are not, quote, something we need to cover on the broadcast television network, as ABC News president so regally put it. Even news icon Dan Rather of CBS, who has fought in the past for more airtime for convention coverage, now refers to them as a, quote, money-raising lobbyist hunting ground infomercial. Well, yes, what takes place inside the hall is a parade of pontification and posturing. But why not go outside the hall, where two huge stories of national importance are playing out? First is that very lobbyist hunting ground that Rather decries. It would be great TV to have investigative reporters poke their cameras into the exclusive watering holes where corporate lobbyists are schmoozing with top elected officials and blatantly buying our government. Second is the astonishing police crackdown against ordinary citizens who dare to protest at these conventions. Like a third world dictatorship, our government now routinely uses massive and abusive force to shut down democratic expression, and it's time for the media to expose it. This is Jim Hightower saying, there's breaking news right in front of these media gooberheads. If only they had the journalistic gumption and integrity to cover it.
Buy Goodfellas on DVD today. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times calls it the best mob movie ever.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The masterpiece by Martin Scorsese, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, is on a 2-disc special edition DVD.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
Loaded with bonus features, including director commentary, documentaries, and more.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Goodfellas, buy it today on DVD. Rated R.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. No doubt, you probably saw it. It got around on the news yesterday afternoon, but it's worth mentioning for those who missed it. The bear that didn't like Bush. Yeah, I know it's spelled a little different. It works well on the radio, though. B-U-S-C-H, the Bush beer. This is out in Baker Lake, Washington. There was a bear at a campground and east of Mount Baker in Washington State. That broke into somebody's food stash, you know, their food that they had there with their camping, and found what it was apparently a couple of cases of beer, because this bear drank 36 cans of Rainier beer, but there was Bush beer there as well. The bear tried one can of it. In fact, here, Fish and Wildlife Enforcement Sergeant Bill Heineck said the bear did try one can of Bush, but ignored the rest. Quoting the good sergeant, he didn't like that Bush and consumed, as nearly as we can tell, about 36 cans of Rainier. Agents a wildlife agent tried to chase the bear from the campground, but the animal just climbed a tree to sleep it off for 4 hours. They finally herded it away, but the next morning came back looking for more beer, apparently. So they used a large humane trap to capture it for relocating.
baiting the trap with the usual donuts and honey, but two open cans of Rainier beer. That did the trick. You got the bear in. Got the bear into the. Oh my! But the bear had some good sense. Must have been a Democratic bear, or an independent bear, or a progressive bear, because it wouldn't sully its lips with Bush beer. I wonder if that company is getting any backlash. Probably not. You know, like these folks who don't buy Heinz ketchup. They've come out with W ketchup, not realizing that Heinz Carey has nothing to do with the company. She runs a foundation that, you know, she inherited from her former husband, who was an heir to the fortune. But she has nothing to do with the company. In fact, the company's political giving goes to the Republicans, not the Democrats, by and large. But they're getting some backlash. I wonder if the Bush beer folks are. Who knows? I'd like to talk about trade deficits for a minute. I know some folks, they say trade deficits, and they go, oh, what's this? You know, this is going to be, well, I don't understand. I don't. This, in my opinion, is probably the single most important issue that we are facing right now. The deficits that we are running up, the debt, the overspending deficits, which is a different kind of deficit, are a very real problem. George Bush is running between $400 and $500 billion deficit right now. That is, you know, spending more than we are bringing in, than the government is bringing in. And, it's actually closer to $700 billion, over $600 billion, because he's spending Medicare money and he's spending Social Security money. Both of those trust funds have surpluses right now. And he's spending that money as well, particularly the Social Security money, so that his deficits look smaller than they actually are. But see, that's money that we are borrowing from ourselves and from other countries, but that we could easily correct. We could easily solve that problem simply by increasing our marginal tax rate. In other words, if we took our taxes back to where they were under Bill Clinton, or maybe, you know, at this point, so much damage has been done, it may have to be even one percentage point higher, which is, for the vast majority of Americans, something that they largely wouldn't notice. It'd be a few hundred dollars a year. And because of these tax cuts, people are instead getting hit with hundreds of dollars a year increases in local property taxes because, you know, the funds to municipalities, counties, states have been cut. In any case, if we did that, we would solve the problem of this just, you know, borrow and spend administration, the Bush administration. But the Bush administration has a larger problem, one that isn't solved. It can't be solved by simply raising taxes. You can't solve the trade deficit problem by raising the income tax. You can't solve it just, you know, with this very simple, quick fix of stopping the conservative starve the beast strategy that is driving the budget deficits. The trade deficit, which this year is going to be over $600 billion, we just had a record month, as I recall, is $55.8 billion in June. I know June wasn't the last month. It takes a while for them to calculate this stuff. That's up 58% from 2 years earlier. We're going to have a $575 billion record trade deficit. What that means is that we will have bought from other countries in the world $575 billion more stuff than we have sold to them. Now, you say, so what? So we're buying more stuff than we're selling. Well, here's the problem. We have to give them something in exchange for that $575 billion worth of stuff that we took delivery on. Then you say, well, that's no problem, just give them dollars. Well, we did that. And they have those dollars now. Where can you spend dollars? Well, you can spend them, say, China, for example, is getting a lot of U.S. dollars. China can spend them in, for example, Saudi Arabia to buy oil. So they buy oil with those dollars. Now the Saudis have the dollars. Eventually, You know, and they may spend them someplace else, but odds are, I mean, they're going to end up there because they've got such a huge inflow of dollars. So what do they do with them? They come back to the United States because actually a dollar is nothing more than an IOU from this country. And the only place it can ultimately be redeemed is in the United States. So they come back to the United States and they say, okay, we got these dollars. We're going to buy part of your country. Do you understand this? This is what happens when you have trade deficits, is that you give away your country. I'm not talking about immigration. This is so much bigger than immigration. Immigration is the red herring that the Michael Savages of the world like to wave around and get all hysterical about. You know, yeah, it's a real problem, it's a real issue, but it's nothing compared to this trade deficit. Because the result of the trade deficit is that we are losing America. Now, some people actually think that that's a good thing. They brag about it because they don't understand what it means. For example, an article in Gannett News Service by Ellen Ferguson. Now, this is a few years old, but it's just an example. This was in April of 1998. So the statistics are actually far worse than they represent. But here, listen to these quotes. This is the article. It starts out, only nine states, so this is an Indiana-based story, only nine states had more workers employed by foreign-owned companies in 1995 than Indiana. California, New York, Texas, Illinois, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Ohio, Florida, and New Jersey ranked 1 through 9 respectively. Indiana was 10th with 180,000 workers who are working, 180,000 people, now this 6 years ago, 180,000 people in Indiana who were working for companies that are wholly owned by corporations or persons who do not live in the United States. They have bought up chunks of America. During a Washington press conference, members of the Organization for International Investment, the OII, highlighted a 146% increase in foreign investment between 1980 and 1995. See, they think this is a wonderful thing. Here we've got Richard A. Goldstein, president and CEO of Unilever, United States, Inc., a Dutch-based company, saying, quote, international investment is good for America. It creates jobs for America, end quote. Well, it does, sort of. It's not like, you know, an American company couldn't create those jobs, too. If there's a demand for a product, you know, for example, my latest book, What Would Jefferson Do?, is published by Random House here in the United States. Random House was always an American-owned company. If Random House went out of business tomorrow morning, some enterprising American entrepreneurs could step in to fill that niche. But Random House has been bought by Bertelsmann, which is the largest publisher in the world, which is based in Germany. So, you know, I find myself in the weird position of saying, when you buy one of my books, ultimately some of that money is going to Germany. Now, why? The reason why is because we have bought more stuff from overseas than we have sold to people overseas. Mostly oil and trinkets from China for Walmart and its ilk. We have bought more stuff from overseas than we have sold overseas, and thus we ended up, the rest of the world ended up with all these IOUs, all these dollar bills that they could only redeem by coming to America and buying pieces of us. This article in 1998 in Gannett notes foreign-based companies accounted for 22% of all U.S. goods and services exported. That means that we are becoming essentially a third world country. People call this insourcing, and you will hear on conservative programs and news programs, you will hear people talking about the wonders of insourcing. Outsourcing is terrible. Insourcing is good. That's where a foreign company comes over here, buys up a factory or a plant, and hires Americans. What they're not telling you is that the profits from that are being repatriated, are going back to that country. They're not staying here. U.S. subsidiaries employ a total of 6.4 million Americans right now. It's a record high. An annual payroll of $350 billion. 34% of the jobs at U.S. subsidiaries are in manufacturing, more than double the proportion of manufacturing at all U.S. companies. U.S. subsidiaries manufacture in America to export goods around the world, accounting for, as I said, 22.4% of all U.S. exports. Over the last 15 years, manufactured insourced jobs grew by 82%. And people say this is a good thing. It's not a good thing. It is the selling off of America. They call it foreign direct investment, FDI. New foreign direct investment in the U.S. totaled $82 billion in 2003, over twice the amount from 2002. Now, where did that $82 billion come from? It came from us buying more oil from the Middle East and more knickknacks from China than we were selling to anybody. So they ended up with all this surplus money. So they took that money and they came over here and they said, okay, we got all this extra money. What should we buy? Okay, I'm going to buy this business. I'm going to buy this factory. I'm going to buy this publisher. I'm going to buy this store. I'm going to buy this chain of gasoline stations. I'm going to buy this fast food chain. And we find, as Michael Moore reported in Fahrenheit 9/11, Saudi Arabia owns 5% of the United States. Just Saudi Arabia. They bailed out Citibank. This is the result of this extremist, misguided trade policy that was begun under Ronald Reagan, continued under George Bush Sr., continued under Bill Clinton, and now is being elevated to the status of a religion by George W. Bush. It's wrong, and it is harming our nation. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When you look at a forest, do you see pretty flowers and cute little critters hopping around? Well, when we billionaires look at a forest, we see redwood decks, teak furniture, and reams of bleached white paper. We look at all the untapped natural resources available, and we see opportunity where others can't see the forest for the trees. Aren't you bored of tree huggers whining about the precious old-growth forests? Don't they understand the law of supply and demand? The more trees we clear-cut, the more scarce we make them, and the more valuable they become as a commodity. So the next time you hear the buzz of chainsaws, know the billionaires are giving Mother Nature more bang for her buck. I'm Zena Fope for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our current account deficit, that's what they call this thing, the trade deficit. It's called the current account deficit. Most Americans don't even know that this exists. We're running it up at the rate of $1.1 million a minute. The cumulative deficit since 1999 is $3.1 trillion. Back in 1977, the gross product, this is from the U.S. Department of Commerce Bureau of Economic Analysis, in 77, the total assets, the total gross product, the revenue, the business done by non-bank U.S. affiliates of foreign companies in the United States, $35 billion. Then Reagan got elected in 1990. By 1990, it had creeped up to $55 billion. It went 38, 42, 55. Then Reagan comes into power, and by the time he leaves in 98, we're at $223 billion. And then you go through Bush, and we're up to $312 billion in 94. Now we're into Clinton. And then under Clinton, 1998, $389 billion. 1999, $457 billion. 2001, the last year for which statistics are available, $486 billion, $535 million of business being done in America where the profits are going outside this country. It's the exact same problem that local communities have when a Walmart moves in. The local money gets sucked out and taken someplace else, in this case to Bentonville, Arkansas. But when we run a trade deficit, then foreign countries come in and take over our businesses, and the profits get sucked out and taken back to those countries. And then what do they do with that profit? They've got to buy more of America because we're continuing to run a trade deficit. We are engaged in suicidal trade policy. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Jay in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
You're a great help here. It's probably the best thing that hit the North Coast since redwood trees.
Well, thank you.
This is not a new problem, though. There's a book that I think you ought to recommend for your readers. It's by a fellow named Clyde Presowitz, who was a trade representative. And the book is called Trading Places.
Yep, I've read it. It's about the situation with Japan. And it's absolutely brilliant. He wrote that back in 94, didn't he, 95?
I'm not sure the exact date, but the beauty of it, he starts out with the signing of the Japanese surrender on the Missouri.
Yeah.
And he points out that the sky was just filled with American bombers who just appeared at the right moment, and they'd flown in from hundreds and hundreds of miles away. And the point was that we had the technology and they didn't. And then he shows how after the war, we just gave it all away. We gave our technology away to the world in exchange for junk. You know, our landfills are filled with cheap Asian garbage, and as you pointed out, we're getting further and further in debt. Americans don't know how to manufacture anything, and we're headed for destruction.
Yeah, I'm an equal opportunity critic in this regard. As I said, you know, Clinton went and cranked this thing up too, and nobody has been talking about it. The last president that I think actually talked about trade policy in a really significant way was Franklin Roosevelt, and before him Herbert Hoover, to his credit, who passed Smoot-Hawley in 1930. Over the objections of both Democrats and Republicans in his own party, passed a bill to try to limit the insourcing. See, we don't even have a good vocabulary for this.
There are all these loaded words. People love the word free. So free trade. America's a free country. Free trade must be a good thing. And they don't realize, free trade is like free love. It leads to all kinds of horrible complications.
Well, not only that, there's no such thing as free trade. I mean, it's almost 1,000 pages of regulations just to create the World Trade Organization.
But even if it were a free trade thing, you can't compete with people who are perfectly happy to live on 50 cents a day. There is no way you can do it.
Yeah, they will eat your lunch. Literally and metaphorically.
There's a comparison with a human cell. It's got a little wall around it to permit it to survive in an environment that's basically hostile.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a wall, you die.
Yeah. Well said. And thanks, Jay, for the call. I appreciate
it. Thank
you. And so, therefore, I am saying, yes, we need protectionism because we need protection from the multinational parasites that are preying upon our body politic. Tom Hartman here with you, 29 minutes past the hour. Truth in broadcasting. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
On the heels of a record-setting sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart, the lawyers in that case have filed a second discrimination suit, this time against Costco Wholesale Corporation. The suit, filed on Tuesday, alleges that the company kept women out of top store management posts. According to the complainant, women make up half of the company's workforce, but fewer than 1 in 6 of Costco's top store managers are women. Costco's annual staff turnover is under 23% among hourly workers, while Walmart's is 50%. The company has been criticized by stockholders because it offers better pay and benefits than Walmart, creating higher costs.
Many people are excited about the Olympic Games being held in Athens this week, but city officials are putting the homeless and workers in last place. According to a report by Amnesty International, up to 40 construction workers died due to poor safety standards during the construction of Olympic facilities. Amnesty International also reports that Athens officials are attempting to clean up the city by rounding up homeless, drug-addicted, and mentally ill people and locking them in psychiatric hospitals until international tourists leave. Also, the government has suspended authorizing inmate parole at 6 of the country's prisons.
The majority of customer service representatives at America West have voted to join the Teamsters. The Phoenix-based airline said it was disappointed by the outcome, but said it will respect the decision of its employees. Until the vote on Tuesday, the customer service workers were the only segment of the airline not represented by a union.
Like all workers, baseball players try to avoid a strike, but in an effort to maintain a two-league system and prevent mergers, Japanese pro baseball players voted overwhelmingly to obtain strike rights. 98% of union members in Japan's Professional Baseball Players Association voted in favor. Preparations are currently underway to strike if several Pacific League teams continue with plans to merge. The Japan Trade Union Confederation pledged to support any strike action by the baseball players.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to take half of the year off from work? Move to Norway. A Norwegian paper recently reported that the amount of time workers are absent from work per year was more than 170 days. The average amount of sick days used by Norwegians amounts to more than 4 weeks. Throw in the average 5 weeks of vacation time, 11 national paid holidays and weekends, and it turns out Norwegians are absent nearly half of the calendar year. The chronic absenteeism has become such a problem that the government now requires a doctor's note for anyone who misses 8 weeks in a year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, slightly more or less. We've been talking here about the trade deficits of all things. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. But first, it's the bottom of the second hour of our program. Time for our daily report from Washington, D.C., from the Talk Radio News Service, Ellen Radner. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. Lots going on, but a lot of it is sort of political. Let's first start out with the non-political,
okay,
which is that the Judiciary Committee led today by Hatch and Leahy. Senator Leahy really was tough. He said that the FBI lost its way, that they had a foreign language program that nobody could understand, that, in fact, when he last talked to them, and he was hoping to get a better answer today, that he could not even, they couldn't even tell him how long, once they taped a foreign, you know, group of people or an individual, how long it took from the time they got the tape to the time they translated the tape. He also said the computer system, he compared it to connecting the dots piece by piece, which was okay for kindergartners but not okay for the FBI. And then Slade Gordon, not exactly a liberal, talked about how they had originally thought on the 9/11 commission to create something similar to the MI5, which is the domestic spying agency in Britain. But even the British told them that that model would not work for the U.S. because of both the relationship with field offices that the FBI has and also because of civil liberties. Then Lee Hamilton
Ellen, we do have a domestic spying agency. It's called the FBI.
Well, I understand, but they're talking about something that only does domestic spying. The FBI also basically does some other law enforcement stuff.
Uh-huh.
A little different.
Okay.
I mean, even I, who am not a big favor of the FBI, will tell you that the FBI, it's not the, I mean, the MI5 really just does spying,
yeah,
on citizens.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. During J. Edgar Hoover's reign throughout the 50s and early 60s, he principally had the FBI doing interstate car theft. I mean, that was the biggest thing, so he could jack up the statistics of arrests and make it look really good. And he refused to investigate organized crime. We know now, because of Anthony Summers' book, Private and Confidential, that it was because Santos Trafficante and Carlos Marcello were blackmailing him about the fact that he was gay and, you know, with...
Well, a friend of mine lived lived downstairs of Clyde Tolson.
Yeah.
And actually, I once got a tour to his house, not Tolson's house, but Hoover's house was on the market.
Uh-huh.
And so I decided to go look at it. I was in the house buying modality at that point. But Tolson, he said... he used to, you know, call him Uncle Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he would ride up and down the elevator with him. And he said if you got him late at night, almost every time he had makeup on.
Yeah. See, I think it's absolutely wonderful that we had an FBI director who liked to dress in drag and who was gay. I just think it's a shame that, you know, the times or whatever, that he couldn't come out, you know, and just be honest about it. But in any case, we've digressed. You were giving us a report from Washington, D.C.
Okay. Couple other interesting things. The Republicans announced today their primetime lineup. And, of course, who are they going to give primetime to? Val Miller.
Oh, gee. Of course. Well, you know, this is their answer to Ron Reagan, isn't it?
You got it. I mean, but Val Miller is, I mean, Ron Reagan would not talk about politics. Zell Miller is going to go hammer the Democrats.
Oh, yeah, of course. Zell Miller used to be my senator.
I
my governor, actually. I used to live in Atlanta.
Okay, a few other
strange
interesting
guy.
Notes on that front. They're going to let the vice president kind of loose after the Republican convention. He's going to go out on his own, and he is going to really do whatever he can to, you know, make his presence known, of course, unless he becomes the October surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that's going to happen is that they are going to try and really outdo the Democrats in terms of their, you're coming to the convention, so you'll see. The Democrats kept away a lot of their top people. I mean, they sort of put Madeleine Albright down Radio Row and that kind of thing, but they didn't really have, you know, Kerry didn't come down, they didn't have Edwards, they didn't have Mrs. Edwards, they really kept a lot of the top, Mary Beth Cahill didn't come down the aisle. Well, the Republicans are going to do just the opposite. They are going to make their top people available 24/7.
Yeah, we got a solicitation and email today from Newt Gingrich wanting to come on the program.
Right. So, there you got it.
Yeah. So it's remarkable. It's a full-court press. I mean, these guys, and wisely so, I suppose, are taking absolutely nothing for granted, and they're playing to win in a very, very hardball fashion. Remarkable. Ellen, what do you think is going to come out of the, you know, what's your prediction for the election? Or is it too early to ask?
You know something? I just had dinner last night with major Democrat. He's very influential with the party. I had lunch with another one, major influential with the party, and everybody honestly cannot predict. It is just too close to call. What one person said is they don't think that Florida is in the offing, that Florida will go one way or the other, but it will be much more clear this time. They're really more worried about some other states.
Yeah, Ohio, Michigan, for example.
Well, just in terms of not how the outcome is, but how the election's going to go to see if there's any irregularities, et cetera. I think Bill Richardson is going to somehow pull out New Mexico for the Democrats, and he's influential enough to do so. But I think people are very worried about some of the other voting practices in some of the other states.
Yeah, Hamilton County, Ohio, which I believe is Cleveland, might be Cincinnati.
No, Cuyahoga. I'm from Cleveland. Please.
Oh, okay. Hamilton County just purged some 100,000 people from their voting list. They just, you know, this was like about a month ago. They just did a Florida there.
Right.
And so, you know, it's happening.
I think Ohio and those are going to be the states that they really have got to watch.
Yeah, remarkable. Ellen Radner of the Talk Radio News Service, thank you so much for calling today.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Great. Talk to you then. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tony in Washington, D.C. Ellen calls from Washington. You're in Washington. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Oh, how you doing?
I'm great. What?
I appreciate it. Just a brief observation on the, I think it was the Mary McCrory, the grand dame of the press room.
Oh, yeah, Helen Thomas.
Helen Thomas, sorry, yes, Helen Thomas, pardon me. I think you said that he put his foot in his mouth, and I think what he tried to do, and I'm trying to be strategic and secondhand quarterback in politics here, that he wanted to put that on the table because that he knew that's the only suit that this king can wear.
Now, hang on just a second. Who's the he you're talking about? Kerry?
Yeah. He took that off. He took that suit off of, or that armor off of Mr. Bush because Karl Rove wanted him to have that clear, defined difference. So what he did, he said, yeah, I would have, but, and if he brings that up into the debate, he's going to tell them why.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is it's subtle. You know, it's subtle and this is not this is not a media environment in which subtlety works anymore. It's a tragedy. It's a disaster for democracy, but it's also a reality that you've got to figure out a way to boil any position down to a 5 or 10 word sentence.
Right, but what, like I said, he sacrificed the immediate effect of those who say, well, there's no difference for what he's going to clarify. when he gets his chance to either doing after the debates or during the debates. And well, that's what he did.
You think that he was being strategic and he was setting up something that he's going to knock over later. But, you know, he's taking a beating in the polls. I mean, in some polls he's dropped 4 or 5 points since he made that comment, and I think that it has to do with that. I think.
You know. Yeah. Oh, no. I'm saying no doubt. That's what he did, because he said, hey, when he gets up there and tries to debate, that's the one thing he's going to say. And that's supposed to be one of the so-called bombshells.
So he's going to out macho Bush in regard to Iraq. But doesn't he risk blowing off all the Dean supporters, the anti-war vote?
That's what I'm saying. Hopefully when he gets to explain himself, he said they didn't finish the sentence, saying.
So he'll be able to have both.
Right. That's what he's trying to do.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
It both ways, which is the criticism that is made of him, that he tries to have it both ways. But, you know, there may be some benefit in having both.
Well, like I said, he's trying to take the fuse out of Karl Rove's, 81 days of strategy.
Yeah, it's now 75 days.
75 days, yeah.
Yeah.
So that is for your political consumption.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. Good observation. Interesting observation. It's really going to be an interesting one to watch to see how this plays out. You know, was that a strategic move on John Kerry's part? Was it something really smart and really slick that has just somehow managed to elude the observation of most of us, or, you know, and that Tony caught? It may well be. Or will he be able to turn it into something like that? Or was it just a blunder, you know, stepping into the trap that George Bush had set, a few days earlier? Time will tell. I'm inclined to think that it was a blunder. But it may well be one that he can survive from. Just to wrap this thing up with the trade deficit before I move along, the other group I mentioned, you know, the last president to really talk about trade policy in the context of whether it's good for America and what impact trade policy has on jobs was Franklin Roosevelt. And to some extent, you could say Truman, and oddly Herbert Hoover. But there is an organization out there that is really championing this cause, and that's the AFL-CIO. The AFL-CIO, a great news release here, August 16th, that was, 3 days ago. U.S. manufacturers are losing markets to foreign competitors because of trade agreements, they say, such as the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, the proposed Free Trade Area of the Americas, the FTAA, and the proposed Central American Free Trade Agreement, the CAFTA, C-A-F-T-A, that reflect the interest of large multinational companies, not domestic manufacturers and workers, union leaders say. And then they go on to point out the AFL-CIO Industrial Council, made up of 14 industrial unions, have called on the Bush administration to revitalize the nation's manufacturing by seeking fair trade policies that reduce the trade deficit, protect U.S. laws, and require enforceable workers' rights and environmental standards. We have got to figure out, friends, you and I, we have got to figure out a way to take this beyond just this program and start waking Americans up to the very real danger to this nation, to our future, to the possibility that that our children can have a better life than we did and that their children can have a better life than they did, that is being compromised by the trade policies that benefit multinational corporations tremendously and screw America, and just absolutely harm the average worker, and you know, eventually we're going to be one of those nations that have been essentially colonized by the rest of the world. I've been in countries where other countries own most of their industries, and there's, you know, foreign in the Philippines, when I was working in the Philippines, it's just, you know, there's all these foreigners just swarming all over the place because they're, you know, outside interests own so many of their businesses, and it's almost like an occupying army. There's this sense of and the Filipinos very often are very deferential to Europeans who are there as executives from foreign corporations who are employing Filipinos. It's like here's our plantation mentality. And so we find, again, looking at the statistics from the U.S. Department of Commerce, Bureau of Economic Analysis, that as of 2001, the last year that they have statistics for, the total percentage of U.S. employment in the utilities industry. 16.5% of all people who work in the utilities industry are working for a foreign employer, which means that the fruits of their labor... See, when you work for somebody, you are giving them your labor. They are using you to increase the value of a product or service, and there's some profit to them in that, otherwise they wouldn't do it. So the benefit of the labor of 16.5% of the people in the utilities industry is going outside the United States. In manufacturing overall, it's 13.7% of all Americans who are employed in manufacturing. The benefits of their labor, the profits generated by their labor, are going to foreign nationals or foreign corporations. In some specific industries, it's downright scary. In the chemical industry, 32%, a third of all American workers, are committing their labor and their lives and their efforts to enrich non-Americans, corporations or individuals outside the United States. In plastics and rubber products, it's only 15%. Gee, that's not quite so bad. 28%, again, nearly a third, in motor vehicles, bodies, and trailers and parts. People say, well, isn't it wonderful? Nissan has come over and they've built a factory and they've put to work a bunch of Americans. Well, you know, it is nice that Americans have jobs, but I'll tell you, if they're making cars for sale here in the United States, and Nissan is... If there's a market for those cars, an American company could be making it. Then why is there a Japanese company coming in here and doing it? Because they ended up with a bunch of extra dollars that they had to spend somewhere because we've been running a trade deficit for three decades. And it's been really huge basically since Reagan. It has been over $100 billion a year. You look at information services. 11.3% of all American employees, in the information services area, are the benefit of their labor, of their time and effort, their sweat and toil. The profits that are derived from that are going to people outside the United States. Pretty amazing numbers. Very amazing numbers. It's Tom Hartman with you, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. We can do it one vote at a time. You and me, let's get out there and change the world.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed three decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy?
In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
From uneducated laughingstock to government minister, an African woman's story of courage. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Frances Moore LePay met a lot of courageous people while researching her book, Hope's Edge, but few were as inspiring as Wangari Maathai, an uneducated young woman concerned about the loss of forests in her East African country of Kenya.
Here's a woman who in 1977 planted 7 trees on Earth Day, and her vision was tree planting throughout her country of Kenya because of the loss of the forest there. The government said unschooled village women can't plant trees. It takes foresters to do that. Well, she started a village movement of tree planting and has succeeded in 20 million trees being planted and surviving in Kenya through nurseries run by unschooled village women.
LePay tells Maathai's story in her new book called You Have the Power. She describes how Maathai's tree planting program drew the unwelcome attention of Kenya's dictator, Daniel Arap Moi. The young woman was ridiculed, beaten, and imprisoned for her efforts. But things have changed. Democratic elections in 2002 brought in a new government headed by the National Rainbow Coalition. LePay says Wangari Maathai is now part of the new power structure.
And here, a woman who had been jailed and beaten by the Moi government is now the deputy minister for the environment in the new government and helping to write a new constitution for Kenya.
LePay says Maathai is a person of unusual courage and persistence, and her story can serve as an inspiration to others fighting an uphill battle to protect the environment.
When we were there in Kenya, her message was that she didn't know that she could succeed. Her message was that she just kept walking.
That's Frances Moore LePay, author of You Have the Power. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Who's who in the chat room? New software. Boy, I have a good friend of many years who is a fairly competent business person who virtually won't answer the phone when Mercury's retrograde. It's this thing that happens 4 times a year for a week or two each time, astrologically. I'm not into astrology, you know, enough to know what the details of it all are, other than that anything that can go wrong will, apparently. And Mercury is retrograde right now, and CompuServe rolled out new software for our chat room yesterday and the day before. And it's working fine. We've got a full room here and a lot of people, but it's also, we're discovering a few oddities. But, yeah, in the chat room, I am actually me, you also. Thousands of employees. Let me just, I just want to find, wrap this thing up just with a couple of rather startling figures. How many people actually work for foreign-owned companies in the United States? And there's how many people in the United States are donating their labor, their sweat, not donating, trading in exchange for a paycheck, their labor and their sweat to companies that are owned outside the United States who are taking the profit that they generate from that labor, and believe me, they do. If they didn't, they wouldn't hire people in the first place. Are taking the profit, the benefit that they generate from that labor outside the United States and keeping it outside the United States. Or if they're putting it back in the United States, they're doing it by buying more of us. or of our nation. In 1977, it was just a little over a million people, 1.218 million people. And then Reagan came along, 2 million people, 1991. By, let's see, 96, excuse me, 81. By 86, it was up to 2.9 million. 87, 3.2 million. Then we really started picking up steam. It was through the early 90s, it was steady around 4.7 million. In fact, we had 92 was 4.715, 93, 4.785. And then we kicked into high gear in 96. As GATT and NAFTA, we hit 5 million, and now we're pushing 6 million, 6,300,000 in 2001, people employed by companies outside the United States. Total assets went from a little over 4 trillion in the year 2000 to over 5 trillion in the year 2001, owned by foreign companies here in the United States. This is the future of our country, folks. We need to do something about it. We need to wake people up, and we need to make sure that the candidates are talking about these issues. Time to bring it to the fore.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
On the heels of a record-setting sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart, the lawyers in that case have filed a second discrimination suit, this time against Costco Wholesale Corporation. The suit, filed on Tuesday, alleges that the company kept women out of top store management posts. According to the complainant, women make up half of the company's workforce, but fewer than 1 in 6 of Costco's top store managers are women. Costco's annual staff turnover is under 23% among hourly workers, while Walmart's is 50%. The company has been criticized by stockholders because it offers better pay and benefits than Walmart, creating higher costs.
Many people are excited about the Olympic Games being held in Athens this week, but city officials are putting the homeless and workers in last place. According to a report by Amnesty International, up to 40 construction workers died due to poor safety standards during the construction of Olympic facilities. Amnesty International also reports that Athens officials are attempting to clean up the city by rounding up homeless, drug-addicted, and mentally ill people and locking them in psychiatric hospitals until international tourists leave. Also, the government has suspended authorizing inmate parole at 6 of the country's prisons.
The majority of customer service representatives at America West have voted to join the Teamsters. The Phoenix-based airline said it was disappointed by the outcome, but said it will respect the decision of its employees. Until the vote on Tuesday, the customer service workers were the only segment of the airline not represented by a union.
Like all workers, baseball players try to avoid a strike, but in an effort to maintain a two-league system and prevent mergers, Japanese pro baseball players voted overwhelmingly to obtain strike rights. 98% of union members in Japan's Professional Baseball Players Association voted in favor. Preparations are currently underway to strike if several Pacific League teams continue with plans to merge. The Japan Trade Union Confederation pledged to support any strike action by the baseball players.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to take half of the year off from work? Move to Norway. A Norwegian paper recently reported that the amount of time workers are absent from work per year was more than 170 days. The average amount of sick days used by Norwegians amounts to more than 4 weeks. Throw in the average 5 weeks of vacation time, 11 national paid holidays and weekends, and it turns out Norwegians are absent nearly half of the calendar year. The chronic absenteeism has become such a problem that the government now requires a doctor's note for anyone who misses 8 weeks in a year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
It's been said that you don't know what hell is until you've had an insurance salesman in your living room prattling on eternally about term life annuities. But I've recently learned about a deeper level of hell reserved for insurance company hucksters who, get this, are ripping off America's young soldiers who are headed into the dread of the Iraqi war. Companies such as American Amicable Life Insurance have weaseled their way onto our basic training bases where they pose as semi-official military agents. They gather boot camp grunts into so-called classes where the unscrupulous agents proceed to pick the pockets of underpaid soldiers. The fleecing is presented by the insurance companies and the military as a compulsory briefing on personal finances. With superior officers in the room, the agents talk of investments and walk the unsuspecting troops through pages of paperwork, getting them to sign blind authorizations to deduct money from their meager monthly paychecks. The briefings don't mention that the 19 and 20-year-old soldiers are not really buying investments, but life insurance. Nor is it pointed out that they will pay far more in costly premiums than they'll ever draw out. Also, the insurance is unnecessary, since nearly every soldier is covered by a low-cost military policy that pays 10 times what these private scams do. It's bad enough that our young men and women are thrust into a war of lies in Iraq, but it's a moral abomination that insurance gougers are allowed to prey on them at home. Yet, not only does the Pentagon turn a blind eye to this sleazy scam, but so does Congress. The lobbying front for the companies, the American Council of Life Insurers, has used its campaign donations to get lawmakers to block any effort to stop this corporate thievery. This is Jim Hightower saying, these companies, lobbyists, Congress critters, and military officials are participating in crass war profiteering, and they deserve a special place in hell.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Calling pressing for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Ian's story recorded the incident in the Record Eagle of Traverse City, Michigan. Catherine Mead wanted to see her first sitting president when George W. Bush visited her home city. 55-year-old social studies teacher. Instead of seeing the president, campaign staffers tore up her ticket and refused her admission because she had a small sticker on her blouse that touted the Democratic ticket of John Kerry and John Edwards. Mead, a teacher at Traverse City West Senior High School, who said that she has seen Queen Elizabeth and Pope John Paul in person and wanted to see George Bush in person. You're just your basic social studies teacher. Says, I had my ticket and photo identification, but they wouldn't let me in because of the sticker. I've never found this kind of screening anywhere in my travels around the world. I mean, you could, you know, the Pope didn't say, are you wearing a Protestant sticker? Queen Elizabeth didn't say, are you wearing something that likes Ireland or the Northern Ireland? No, the I shouldn't step into that one, should I? Already, Queen Elizabeth didn't say, you're not wearing something that represents our former colony, India. Are you? Whatever. No. No, they didn't. She says, I can't imagine being denied access to hearing the President of the United States speak. Well, this raises a really interesting question. Whose president is he? Is he the president of all the people of the United States of America? Apparently not. This is really comedic, said a man holding a Kerry Edwards sign. What an absolute nonsense. Several people outside the campaign event trying to console Mead, who was visibly upset. This 55-year-old social studies teacher. Kate Steffen, chair of the Grand Traverse Republican Party, could not be reached for comment after the rally, but Ralph Sofrendi, a Traverse City commissioner, school board member, and former police chief who worked security at the front gate, said it is part of Bush campaign policy. We were told, he said, that anyone with stickers or shirts would not be let in if they would not take them off. Mead came up to me after her ticket was torn up, but I told her there was nothing I could do. I know her. This guy's the former chief of police for Traverse City, and he knows this woman who is a high school social studies teacher in Traverse City. Traverse City's a little town, relatively speaking. He knows her. He says, I know her, and it was really too bad. But I had to say that we had a very few instances of that. I thought it went very well. Well, you know, nice. Most people didn't wear a Kerry Edwards button on their blouse. But she did. And therefore, she could not come in to see her president. Lynn Larson, chairman of the Grand Traverse Democratic Party, said the move is typical of other Bush rallies that only allow Republican supporters to see the president. She said, the very reason that we are here protesting is to protect our First Amendment rights. When the Secret Service rips somebody's sticker off or takes their ticket away, it makes me even more determined to march to protect our rights. Mead, the woman who was thrown out, her ticket, which she appropriately and lawfully got, was torn up, who has taught for 2 decades, instead stood on the sidewalk so that the John Kerry supporters listening to Bush from behind a fence. I really, truly wanted, she said, to have the experience of having seen the president and hear him speak, which is very important to me as a social studies teacher. How could anyone in the United States deny someone entry? Isn't this a democracy? Well, that's a very good question, Mrs. Mead. Isn't this a democracy? Does George Bush consider it a democracy?
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
we the people make the decisions here in the United States, don't we, Mr. Bush?
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Oh, excuse me. Before attending a rally to hear Vice President Dick Cheney, citizens in New Mexico were required to sign a political loyalty oath, notes Sidney Blumenthal on Salon.com. Article, Isn't This a Democracy? The loyalty oath, approved by the Republican National Committee, says, and I kid you not, it actually says this. This is the I, fill in your full name, do hereby, and hereby is misspelled, endorse George W. Bush for re-election of the United States. That's what it said. So, in order to see George Bush, you had to pledge that you were hereby endorsing him for re-election of the United States. To what? Well, we would like to see the United States re-elected to membership in the UN. Or NATO. Or maybe, I don't know. Do we want the U.S. to join? I mean, what is it that they want the U.S. to join? They're not saying. I, Joe Blow, do hereby endorse George W. Bush for re-election of the United States. The form noted, quote, in signing the above endorsement, you are consenting to use and release of your name, another typo there. You are consenting to use and release of your name by Bush Cheney as an endorser of President Bush. A badly put together sentence, too. It should say, you are consenting to use and release of your name as an endorser of President Bush by Bush Cheney. But, you know, apparently, in order to get in to see Dick Cheney, you had to demonstrate that you were illiterate about the role of the United States in the world and the role of the president domestically, and you had to be willing to have your name put in the local newspaper saying that you were an advocate of illiteracy, incoherence. See, all right, George Bush is traveling around the country. He's doing these gigs called Ask President Bush. The only problem is anybody who has a serious question is not allowed in. And not only that, when you get in there, they hand out talking points to people. Here are some suggested questions. Oh, that's entertaining. As Sidney Blumenthal notes, at every Ask President Bush rally, Bush repeats the same speech touting a, quote, vibrant economy, and his leadership in a war where, quote, you cannot show weakness. He introduces local entrepreneurs who praise his tax cuts. More than 1 million jobs have been lost in his term, the worst record since Herbert Hoover. Then Bush calls on questioners. More than a fifth of them profess their evangelical faith or denounce gay marriage. One out of every five people who he calls on, just by coincidence, gets up and doesn't ask a question, but make a statement. In one of these two areas, in Niceville, Florida, one said, this is the very first time I have felt that God was in the White House. How did George Bush reply to that? One of his adoring fans saying, this is the very first time I have thought God was in the White House. George Bush said, thank you. Well, you know, he did tell the Amish God speaks through him. Yeah, he really did. There has been some debate around that. He said, and I quote, God speaks through me, end quote. And some people think me is actually short for Maine, you know, as in the Postal Service, M-E. And he was really trying to say Maine is God's country. But he was in, as I recall, Pennsylvania talking to the Amish, so maybe not. I sure hope he was talking about Maine. Another person stood up and said, Mr. President, as a child, how can I help you get votes? See, these are the really tough questions that get tossed at the president in these Ask George Bush rallies, where if you show up wearing a carry button, you are toast. You are not allowed, even if you have tickets, even if you're a Republican. In Albuquerque, he received this question, quote, now, consider, this is, you know, somebody had to go to one of the one of the people who run the microphones and say, I have a question, and they said, what's your question? And they told them what the question was, and they said, okay, you can ask the president that question. And they got up there, and this, you know, somebody who's signed a loyalty oath, and they said, and this is their question, these are the hardball questions that get asked of George Bush at his Ask President Bush rallies. Quote, it's an honor every day when I get up to pray for you as president. End quote. That was the question. Another person got up and said in Albuquerque, their question. Yes, we have a question from over here in the corner. Thank God we finally have a commander in chief. Oh, you're welcome, yes. Others repeat attack lines on John Kerry's military record. This presumably from the talking points that get passed out. To which Bush responds, notes Sidney Blumenthal, with an oblique but encouraging thanks. Blumenthal notes, and in this article in Salon.com, isn't this a democracy? That Bush's overriding strategy is to bolster his credential as a decisive military figure and to impugn his opponent's manhood. That John Kerry, he actually has a hairstylist. Yeah, they're out there talking. I mean, this is like one of the major talking points of the week. I got the email from the Republicans. Be sure and talk about John Kerry's French hairstylist. It wasn't actually from the Republican Party. It was, you know, it was one of these fringe groups. In his latest TV commercial, he says, we cannot hesitate. We cannot yield. We must do everything in our power to bring an enemy to justice before they hurt us again. This is just appealing to fear. Appealing to just raw and creating fear. They hurt us again. Well, if somebody says that, what do you think about? Well, you think about being hurt again, of course. But who is the enemy who wants to hurt us again? Well, I think logic would indicate, and, you know, most actual good kind of military and police science would indicate, it's a guy named Osama bin Laden. George Bush, in 2 years, has only said bin Laden's name out loud 10 times, and on 6 of those occasions, it was because he was asked a direct question about bin Laden. So only 4 times did he have anything to say about bin Laden at all. See, you know, some would suggest he likes the idea of just keeping up a perpetual war, because after all,
when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah, there you go. When will George Bush mention Osama bin Laden's name? Well, probably not until bin Laden is safely in a cage someplace, ready to be trotted out as the climax of the Republican National Convention. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894, our number, by the way.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. In my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, I examine how Thomas Jefferson's democratic vision for our nation has been under constant attack by conservatives who see political power as a tool to manipulate laws for their personal financial gain. Among the truths you'll learn by reading this book are how Jefferson warned that the merging of big business with state interests could be the greatest threat to democracy, Today we find that these fascist ideals have been prevalent in virtually all of George Bush's political and judicial appointments and legislation, the same as Hitler did when he overthrew the German democracy in 1933. You'll also learn how new scientific studies show that Jefferson was right when he cited in the Declaration of Independence that democracy was consistent with the laws of nature. Turns out that the natural state of all animals is democracy, and alpha animals only rarely act as leaders. What would Jefferson do? A Return to Democracy by me, Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Would you like a little chaos with your order? Might be an interesting idea.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of world oil reserves.
Oh.
Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with chaos? Well,
you're free.
Oh.
And freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos.
Yeah. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's going to take time to restore chaos. But you're free. 25 minutes past the hour. Sidney Blumenthal notes, since the birth of the American party system, presidential candidates have always gone directly to the sovereign people, who are the only source of legitimacy and power to make their case. He points out after the Democratic convention, and really for a long time before, John Kerry went from literally from coast to coast, all across the United States, and anybody who wanted to show up was let in. It's just that, it's that simple all along. This is called going to the people. Because the people are the ones who hold the power. And everywhere Kerry went, of course, he encountered hecklers. That's the price you pay. But at Bush rallies, Blumenthal notes, George Bush is the packaged president as pseudo-populist. In these controlled environments, he says, but these controlled environments reflect his deeper view of the presidency as sovereign, preempting democracy. Could it be Bush doesn't believe in democracy? Your thoughts on this, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Preston in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Preston, what's up?
Well, I was thinking of your article that you wrote the other day regarding how they
try to control people through fear.
Yeah.
And another technique is through demoralizing people and making them feel hopeless, that it's all too big and, you know, we're just one little person or two and we can't do anything. But this weekend, there will be a couple hundred thousand people gathering at different events to try to make change in the society. And one of those events is Soul Fest in California, and I noticed you're going to be speaking there.
I am. I absolutely will be on Saturday.
And for people who don't know about it, Soul Fest, that's SOLFest.org. That's a gathering of people who are working towards solar power and organic food and all kinds of good stuff that the current oligarchy don't want us to know about.
Yep.
And also, there are, you know, the whole journals like Solar Today talk about the million solar roofs project going on in this country right now. And they've put up 300,000 solar roofs in different states around the country to try to get us away from all the coal burning that's so harmful, contributes to the climate change, and destroying mountaintops in Appalachia and things like that.
Yeah, but you know, the official administration policy on this is...
I know nothing, I see nothing, and I see nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. And the other event I want to mention real quickly, and, you know, I don't know if anybody can even attend these things, but just to know that these things are going on, I think, is good for the spirit. And that's the Seattle Hemp Fest, which for the past 9 years has been getting over 100,000 people for this weekend event to talk about how hemp could be used for paper and fuel and fiber and food.
Mm-hmm.
And the injustices of the drug war generally.
Yeah, and that being hemp that doesn't contain tetrahydrocannabinol, it doesn't contain the active ingredient in marijuana. So it's actually, and it grows faster than trees. I mean, it's a remarkable product. Preston, got to move along. Thanks for the call. Well said, and some good events coming up. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We're going to pick up a couple of other calls here, but right after this break. Got a break coming up in just a few seconds. These controlled, strutting and swaggering on the stage as though he has conquered the crowd, says Sidney Blumenthal. Bush plays to true believers. What does this say about the mentality of this administration with regard to democracy? What level of respect or disrespect do they have toward American democracy? If they're going to say, you know, yeah, the Constitution does say you have the right to free speech and the right of the people to peaceably assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances shall not be abridged, but you can't come in here and see the president if you've got that John Kerry button on your lapel. Sorry, buddy. That's not democracy. 29 minutes past the hour.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
On the heels of a record-setting sex discrimination lawsuit against Walmart, the lawyers in that case have filed a second discrimination suit, this time against Costco Wholesale Corporation. The suit, filed on Tuesday, alleges that the company kept women out of top store management posts. According to the complainant, women make up half of the company's workforce, but fewer than 1 in 6 of Costco's top store managers are women. Costco's annual staff turnover is under 23% among hourly workers, while Walmart's is 50%. The company has been criticized by stockholders because it offers better pay and benefits than Walmart, creating higher costs.
Many people are excited about the Olympic Games being held in Athens this week, but city officials are putting the homeless and workers in last place. According to a report by Amnesty International, up to 40 construction workers died due to poor safety standards during the construction of Olympic facilities. Amnesty International also reports that Athens officials are attempting to clean up the city by rounding up homeless, drug-addicted, and mentally ill people and locking them in psychiatric hospitals until international tourists leave. Also, the government has suspended authorizing inmate parole at 6 of the country's prisons.
The majority of customer service representatives at America West have voted to join the Teamsters. The Phoenix-based airline said it was disappointed by the outcome, but said it will respect the decision of its employees. Until the vote on Tuesday, the customer service workers were the only segment of the airline not represented by a union.
Like all workers, baseball players try to avoid a strike, but in an effort to maintain a two-league system and prevent mergers, Japanese pro baseball players voted overwhelmingly to obtain strike rights. 98% of union members in Japan's Professional Baseball Players Association voted in favor. Preparations are currently underway to strike if several Pacific League teams continue with plans to merge. The Japan Trade Union Confederation pledged to support any strike action by the baseball players.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Want to take half of the year off from work? Move to Norway. A Norwegian paper recently reported that the amount of time workers are absent from work per year was more than 170 days. The average amount of sick days used by Norwegians amounts to more than 4 weeks. Throw in the average 5 weeks of vacation time, 11 national paid holidays and weekends, and it turns out Norwegians are absent nearly half of the calendar year. The chronic absenteeism has become such a problem that the government now requires a doctor's note for anyone who misses 8 weeks in a year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
And welcome back, Jim Turr there.
Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
From BlueCanyonProductions.com.
Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
One of the great campaign songs out there. You can find that at BlueCanyonProductions.com. It's a marvelous site, and Jim Turr is a very, very talented guy. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And Rick in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Ditto.
I have a kind of a question here. Mm-hmm. In the past, when oil prices, crude oil prices have spiked, it almost reflected the next day at the pump.
Right.
Yesterday, crude oil prices were at $47 a barrel. And, you know, the price here in Santa Fe, at least, and I think probably everywhere else, has been pretty constant.
Yeah.
I would hate to think that George Bush has that much influence over all these different oil companies in the United States.
Well, there really is. I mean, consider the fact that the last time that oil prices were in the $40 range was in, as I recall, I may be wrong on this, but I don't think I am, was in 73 during that, you know, oil crisis. And back then, my recollection is that gasoline was selling for around 75, 80 cents a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's the relationship between the price of gas at the pump and the price of oil, you know, there is some relationship there, but the big relationship is between the price of gas at the pump and the profits of the oil refining and delivering companies and pumping the oil companies, basically, because they control the entire thing from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it just seemed to me in the past, in the recent past, every time oil has gone up, crude oil price has gone up, it's reflected in the pump.
Yeah, Yeah.
And this time it's not.
Well, that's because there's a nice excuse. Well, it's just certainly. I mean, you've got an oil industry CEO as president. You've got an oil industry CEO as vice president. You've got an oil industry consultant as national security advisor who has a tanker named after her. Surprise?
Not really, but I'm just kind of like really wondering.
And there's an election going on. Come on, Rick. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I would hate to think that George Bush has that much influence.
Well, I would hate to think it, too, but I think it's pretty conspicuous. Rick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Also in Santa Fe, Josh is on the line. Hey, Josh.
Hey, how are you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Okay, I'm a longtime listener and a first-time caller, too, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your show, and I'm actually going to be attending your We the People workshop here in Santa Fe. So
oh, great. We're going to have fun.
We'll get to know each other there. Get to meet each other. I have a question, and I want to get your opinion on it. I've been working for the Kerry campaign, and I still am, and my wife and I both are and very committed to that. But we're concerned about a comment that Kerry made and the implications that it may have on independent voters who are probably going to be the key to this election. And I wanted to get your opinion on it. The comment is when he was asked if he would invade Iraq if he had known that they had no weapons of mass destruction, the very fact that he said, yes, he still would have. And when you come to Santa Fe, you'll see. I mean, I know you've been here before, right?
Yeah, I have. And Josh, let me just correct something. He wasn't asked, would you invade Iraq? That's what George Bush says he was asked. And that's how Bush has reframed it. He wasn't asked that, though. He was asked, would he, knowing what he knows now, still vote for a resolution giving the president the power to threaten war in order to force Iraq to accept weapons inspectors. So the real question is, if you think that there's a very real possibility that another nation is threatening the United States or its strategic interests or its allies or whatever, if you think that there's a very real interest that another country is doing, you know, represents a threat to us, and then would you be in favor, Mr. Kerry, of voting to give the President of the United States the authority to threaten them with attack if they don't comply with the United Nations mandates? And the authorization that Kerry voted for specifically said that before the president could engage in hostilities, number one, he had to have exhausted all international options, which he didn't do. And number two, he had to demonstrate to the United States Congress, he had to swear to the United States Congress, and he actually wrote a letter swearing this, that he knew that he had proof that there were weapons of mass destruction and that Saddam intended to use them. And so Kerry said, you know, knowing what I know now, I still would have voted to authorize that because I felt that it was right that the president should have the power to force Saddam to accept weapons inspectors.
But, well, I guess then my question...
But the problem is that's a nuanced answer, right? That's the problem, Josh, is that...
My question would be, do you think Kerry and Edwards together and the whole campaign is doing an adequate job of presenting what Kerry actually voted for, or do you think that the Republican smear machine is smearing them so badly on this that they're going to lose independence?
Yeah, no, I do not think they're doing an adequate job. I think they are blowing it with regard particularly to this issue. Kerry never should have taken that bait because, you know, if you view the entire, you know, minute and a half of his answer, sort of like the minute and a half of my answer to you, you get it. That he never voted for a war in his mind. He wasn't voting for a war. He was voting for the president to have the power to protect the nation from the possibility of something. But that, you know, that kind of, as the Republicans would say, nuance, that kind of nuance doesn't fly in a media that is controlled by, you know, the where our news media no longer are independent of the entertainment divisions and of the need for corporate profit. It just doesn't work.
What I'm worried about is that it's not going to fly even in the debates, and that Kerry's going to get trounced on it.
We'll see.
Though Bush is the biggest flip-flopper we've ever seen from a president.
We'll see. I mean, Tony in Washington, D.C. called in the last hour and said that he thinks that that Kerry said that specifically so that he could set up Bush to knock him over when the debates come on. We'll see. Is Kerry being brilliant and strategic?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the call, Josh.
We'll see you in a little over a week.
Yep. Look forward to it. Is Kerry being brilliant and strategic, or did he just screw up? And, you know, I'm of the latter opinion, but there are some who are of the former opinion. Time will tell. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, I hope everything's wonderful in Vermont today.
It's actually the sun just came out. It's beautiful here in the People's Republic.
And you know what? Today is overcast and not so beautiful. So every now and then it all evens out.
There you go. What's up?
Well, I have a guess and a question. My guess is about the October surprise.
Yeah.
How's that contest going?
We've got a lot of people who have entered it. It's quite a good
long thread. Throw out a couple of good ones.
Well, I don't have it in front of me. I'll do it some other time.
Okay. My guess is this. I believe that the Bush administration is going to arrange for the Iranians to believe, this is a little complicated, to believe that we are going to come and get their reactor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of, and basically, because they believe that, they're going to strike us first in Iraq, which we will use as the excuse to, in fact, go and get their reactor.
Yeah, yeah. That's a not unreasonable suggestion. I mean,
I tried to be more unreasonable, but I slipped now and then.
My antenna went up, it wasn't last week, it was the weekend before last, when on two or three of the weekend news shows, Condi Rice shows up, and no matter what question was asked of her, she spun the conversation around to discussing the dangers of Iran.
There you go.
And I'm scratching my head going, okay, her talking points are pretty clear. She's here to inform Americans about the dangers of Iran, just like right after 9/11, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld were out there talking about the dangers of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And this is how they start cranking this stuff up.
Can you say trial balloon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Here's my question to you.
Sure.
Here's my question.
Go for it.
And it's the media question that I have so often, but I'm going to ask it again because I don't understand. I thought that when we found out that when the Bush people were trying to say it's not three-year-old news when we warned you about the buildings, we just got this guy, and they outed a current guy giving us a lot of information in Al-Qaeda.
Right.
I mean, did that really happen?
Yeah, it did, although actually there is some disagreement about whether it was the Bush administration who outed him or whether it was the Pakistanis. It looks like it was the ISI, the Pakistani Secret Service, who actually outed him in Karachi, and then the Bush administration stepped in and took credit for outing him, thinking that nobody would know it came from them. And then Condi Rice went on TV that Sunday, and Wolf Blitzer asked her about it, and she said, well, it's terrible that somebody put this name out there. And he said, well, it was you, you know. And she's like, well, but it was supposed to be on background, you know. In other words, don't you're not supposed to
use it. Yeah, because the Pakis were talking about it. They were whispering it. Nobody was necessarily hearing it until we decided to carry it forward.
Could be.
It seemed to me to be a huge example of how the administration isn't really protecting us. And yet, for 2 weeks, we heard the scream from Dean, and this story went away so fast.
Oh, I know. It's an absolute tragedy. Billy, thanks for the call. I appreciate you. You raised good points. And this is an example of the trivialization of real news. And can you imagine if a Democrat had been in power? If Bill Clinton was president, and for political purposes, he had outed the only agent that we have inside Al-Qaeda, who was at the nerve center of Al-Qaeda, relaying top-secret email messages back and forth between Al-Qaeda cells all around the world, and Bill Clinton outed that guy, how long do you think he would survive as president of the United States? I mean, isn't that a little above, no pun intended, above the level of, you know, him and Monica? But Are we gonna see or hear anything about it? I somehow doubt it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ultimately, the question in my mind, does George Bush think that he is responsible to we the people, or does he think that we the people must be obedient to him? I vote for the latter. I think he really and truly believes that he is, Rex, Imperious Rex. He's certainly behaving that way. Keith in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Keith, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Well, a couple, 2 points. One was on this same radio station, after you're on, they have this this program that came on around the same time that Air America liberal network was launched, and it's something with a similar name, but it's really right-wing stuff, and it seems to have a lot of input from this guy who has WorldNet Daily,
mm-hmm.
if you're familiar with that website.
Yeah, I, you know, if you're calling to discuss the programming of any of our affiliate stations.
No,
I don't go there.
My point is only that he has a his mantra is let's take America back, and I'm like, take America back. It's about as conservative as it can get. I mean, what do they, we can rename, Bush can take the name Khan and pray for a son, I guess.
If you look at their penchant for pens, the free speech zones and things, presumably
right.
when all people of color are in pens, when all gays are in pens, when all, you can come up with a long list, all Democrats are in pens.
Right.
It's a siege mentality.
It really is. But I had one more point, which was the other day you were talking about Secretary Snow.
Yeah.
And this touches on something else you were just discussing about oil prices. But last year I heard him on C-SPAN talking to a bunch of people at some economics gathering in Washington. And he was saying that someone asked him if he thought economic recovery without job growth was possible. And he said no. And then we kind of cut to further along, and Greenspan seemed to be talking all last spring, really, and through the winter about possibilities of deflation that he seemed to be a little leery of. And then all of a sudden, oil prices spike up, and that ripples through the whole economy, typically, increases inflation because
sure.
everything has an oil component, transportation or in manufacturing, plastics, all that stuff we rely on. But, it just seems curious to me that it is a situation where we haven't seen that inflationary pressure on the economy yet, even though oil prices are very high. And may be reasons why we don't see it in gasoline, but usually, typically, it's reflected throughout the economy. So I'm just wondering if our economy is in such bad shape, we pump so much debt into it, that we're in a position where, even the inflationary pressure they've introduced by spike in oil prices, there's such a deflationary pressure that
Well,
not doing anything.
Yeah, part of the deflationary pressure comes from cheap imports. As we continuously,
yeah.
I mean, we're dramatically increasing the levels of cheap imports, and that is a deflationary pressure, and it also increases the rate at which foreigners are buying up America and taking ownership of it. So we're giving away our country basically through that process. The other thing is, and this is really the larger issue that you raise, Keith, is how do you define an economy? What when you say
right.
the economy, what are you talking about? If the whole point of an economy is to inure to the benefit of a very small number, say a few hundred thousand at the very most, of very wealthy people, of people who make more than $1 million a year, then you could say the economy is getting better when the stock market goes up, for example.
Right.
Or
right.
when corporate profits go up, as they have done significantly in the last 2 or 3 years. They're up 30% now here over 3 years ago. On the other hand, if you say that the purpose of an economy, the definition of an economy, is the welfare of the vast majority of the people. Do people have jobs? Do people have access to health care? Do people have good education? Are things working? Is the nation functioning in a healthy and coherent and sustainable fashion? Then you have to say this economy absolutely sucks and has for 3 years.
And
really longer than that, this economy has been going in the toilet ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor in the early 1980s and began bringing the thing down.
Well, I'm just wondering if at some point, they can keep controlling it to a certain extent. They can keep coming up with new ways to allow people to refinance their houses or whatever. But at a certain point, they won't be able to control it, and they're going to get blasted with everyone else.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. If you're a multimillionaire, there are ways to protect and hedge that revenue. So it's the everyone else who's going to get blasted, Keith. Thanks for the call. Good point. Well made. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Exposing the con in conservative.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western
Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
The recent handover of power back to the Iraqis has got investors worried. They ask, what about our war profiteering? Will we still be able to privatize everything in sight? Darlings, everything is under control because everything is still under our control. Alawi has been a wonderful CIA asset for years. Ambassador John Negroponte cut his teeth working with death squads out of Honduras in the 80s, and 140,000 American troops are protecting our oil as we pump it out from under their soil. We won't let this business bonanza be ruined by the evils of accountability or democracy. So relax. We know what we're doing. I'm xenophobe for this. Will we still be able to privatize everything in sight? Darlings, everything is under control because everything is still under our control. Alawi has been a wonderful CIA asset for years. Ambassador John Negroponte cut his teeth working with death squads out of Honduras in the 80s, and 140,000 American troops are protecting our oil as we pump it out from under their soil. We won't let this business bonanza be ruined by the evils of accountability or democracy. So relax. We know what we're doing. I'm xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace.
BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace.
Driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of years. Ultimately saves money for...
Driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of years. Ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term. But on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University.
800-511-MAX and futurist Benjamin Krim.
Emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term. but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University.
800-511-MAX. And futurist Benjamin Krim, 1-888-242-8272. Thank you to our sponsors, also the Progressive and the Populist magazines.
He never was a hero for this county's shining light.
We got a, I got an email here from a listener to our program. I guess it was the day before yesterday that we had on Kevin, what was it, Kevin Zeese, I believe, the head of the Nayer campaign nationwide. And Skip, who he doesn't indicate where he's located, but he was listening to the program, and he says, I started to wonder still holding out that hope, and I will certainly vote for him. And then Skip goes on to say, I was at a Sierra Club function in Boston back in the 80s. All of a sudden, John Kerry comes in and meets with the members. I don't think he would have done that if he was truly leaning to the right. I remember talking to him about how worried I was about what Reagan was doing. He seemed genuinely worried, too. And he goes on to say, Skip, this this correspondent, he says, this reminds me of an interview with Richard Perle I saw when I lived in Boston in the 80s. He was outlining the invasion of the former USSR. Remember, the country that has almost as many nuclear weapons pointed at us as we had pointed at them. Richard Perle was outlining the invasion of the former USSR with nothing more than a few aircraft carriers. It sounds like the type of thinking used to get us into Iraq. I'm telling you, this is a very real, real danger. And finally, wrapping up the Swift Boat veterans for lying and discrediting, Larry Thurlow, one of the chief Swift Boat liars, has been on record, signed an affidavit, in fact, saying that John Kerry was not under fire when he won that first award, because Thurlow was running the boat that was right next to him. Well, now it turns, in fact, he says, I never heard a shot. Well, now it turns out the Washington Post subpoenaed under the Freedom of Information Act Thurlow's military records and finds out that he was awarded a Bronze Star that same day, quote, for providing assistance to a damaged Swift boat despite enemy bullets flying around him. Yeah. In fact, it says it took place under constant enemy small arms fire, during which Lieutenant Thurlow completely ignored him providing immediate assistance. But when he was getting an award, he was quite pleased to say there were bullets flying. Thank you, Thurlow. Thanks to Louise for producing our show and to Ira for engineering it. Thanks for showing up.
You've
see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior.